Space, the final economic frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Indicator.
It's 5-day-a-week mission for Stacey Vulcan-Smith and Cardiff Klingon Garcia to tell you short stories about the economy and boldly go where no podcaster has gone before.
All right, bit of tomfoolery there.
Tomfoolery?
I know, I'm like Henry Higgins over here. But yesterday on The Indicator, we explained how NASA's economic model had evolved from a centralized system, where NASA pretty much did everything, to a more decentralized system, in which NASA is partnering with private companies on all kinds of funky ideas. Ideas that might one day lead to a complex, fully developed space economy.
And today on the show, we're going to tell you what that space economy might look like someday, what these private companies are working on, and we're also going to tell you about some economic challenges they're going to face as they try to make this vision a reality.
This message comes from The Indicator's sponsor, Capital One. Capital One's indicator is zero because they offer accounts with zero fees or minimums. And they offer accounts that can be opened from anywhere in 5 minutes. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Capital One NA. Support also comes from SAP Concur. Employees can submit expenses from anywhere. It's how the best-run businesses make their expenses run better. SAP Concur. Learn more at concur.com/NPR.
Matt Weinzierl, our space economist, he's back for today's episode. And he says the obvious place to start understanding the future is with the present, and specifically with satellites.
Satellites have been around for decades. That's why most of the money that's made in space, says Matt, still comes from satellite technology. Satellites are mainly useful in telecommunications, like sending broadcast signals that make it possible to watch television.
But over time, Matt says, satellites have developed other uses. These mainly have to do with their ability to observe the Earth from above, like the GPS technology that helps you navigate through traffic, or the ability to watch shipping lanes so that you can see how countries are trading with each other, or even to look at parking lots outside of malls and stores, which might give you a sense of how well the economy is doing based on how crowded those parking lots are.
These are the sorts of things that people who manage operations at corporations and supply chain management really care about. They're things that financial markets are willing to pay for and things that maybe even you and I might be willing to pay for.
But looking out a bit further in the future, says Matt, is when you start to get the ideas and activities that seem like they were pulled out of a science fiction novel. And so we're going to look at a few of them. First one, space access. Space access companies work on getting people and cargo into space.
And this includes space tourism. For example, companies like Blue Origin, which is Amazon founder Jeff Bezos' company, and Virgin Galactic are already near the point where they can offer trips to space to mainly a limited number of very rich people, at least for now.
Or, you know, a member of NSYNC.
And the idea is that these would be pretty short experiences. You'd have something like 4 minutes of zero gravity as you do the parabolic arc up into space and then back down again.
But also, space access companies work on developing better rockets and spacecrafts to travel into space and to travel through space. The idea is to make trips into space cheaper and safer over time, and also to build rockets and spacecraft that can be used over and over again, like airplanes are.
Okay, so space access, that's one thing that companies are already working on. Another thing is asteroid mining. And it's exactly what it sounds like. The simple concept here is to land a spacecraft or some other kind of vehicle on an asteroid and then mine for metals or materials that can be brought back to Earth. Things like platinum or palladium or other things that are hard to find on Earth but could be really useful. Or maybe in the distant future, to find metals and things that will be kept in space to build things in space.
Like IKEA in space. Though, Cardiff, we were surprised to learn about what might eventually be one of the most valuable things to mine on an asteroid. And Matt says that is water.
And it would be valuable for a number of things, obviously just to sustain life, but also water can provide radiation shielding. So if there's going to be people who are living up in space, they need to be protected from radiation that's in space, and water turns out to be a pretty good shield. It can also, and this is essential, be split into oxygen and hydrogen, which can provide rocket fuel.
Estimates for just when asteroid mining will actually become a reality have kind of fluctuated over the years. The optimistic estimates are that it's just years away, but the wait might be longer. Just hard to know for sure.
And the final category of space activities that companies are already working on will sound kind of familiar. It is manufacturing, making stuff. And specifically, it's using newer technology like robotics and 3D printing, which takes raw materials and turns them into a custom-made product.
It seems increasingly feasible to build things in space from resources in space that will be useful in space.
Matt says one company in particular has been working on this. It is called, very appropriately, Made in Space. But other companies like Axiom are also developing technology that could make it possible to build commercially run space stations, places where people might someday be able to live in space, and for scientists to conduct experiments. Matt says there might one day be gas stations in space where space vehicles can refuel. I wonder if they'll still sell, like, snacks and stuff at space.
The space 7-Eleven?
Yeah, the space 7-Eleven. Or if, like, people will complain about prices at the pump in space.
So you can now start to piece together a vision of the future based on what these companies are working on. It's a future where people might be living on these commercially made space stations, maybe staying in space hotels, making the stuff in space that people need to live, using raw materials that were found in space rather than sending stuff up from the Earth. But getting there from here isn't just about waiting for the technology to exist. You also have to solve the economic problems that will be unavoidable.
One problem is known as complementarities. A bunch of these space activities do not make sense on their own. They only make sense when they go together. So Matt gives the example of asteroid mining, which can find fuel for space vehicles, and manufacturing, which you need to build a gas station in space for those vehicles to refuel.
So, for instance, resource mining. Going up and pulling things out of asteroids for use in space is not a very good business model if there's nobody in space to use them. Similarly, having a gas station in space doesn't make any sense if nobody can provide you with the fuel from the asteroids to refuel people in space.
This raises the question of how the government, or NASA, should help with the simultaneous development of these technologies. Maybe, for example, by subsidizing certain activities or otherwise helping to coordinate the activity of these different companies.
A second economic problem goes by the name negative externalities. These are bad spillover effects from private sector activity. So you can think of environmental pollution from a factory that burns fossil fuels. For commercial activity in space, one negative externality is all of the trash and debris that is orbiting the Earth right now.
I mean, you wouldn't even believe it, but it's just leftover parts from upper stages of rockets, things that fell off the space shuttle, old satellites that don't work anymore but are just floating around out there.
There are tens of thousands of these pieces orbiting the Earth at very high speeds, and it's getting dangerous and crowded up there. But there hasn't been a great incentive for any one company or country to fix this problem, because it's not their problem, and there's no global regulator telling people they have to. There have been some international agreements between countries trying to solve this problem, but they have not made much progress.
And then finally, there's the problem of property rights. If an asteroid mining company discovers a really valuable metal, does that company get to claim all of the metal on the whole asteroid for itself? What if those metals would be valuable on Earth, but the company wants to keep them up there for use in space? And what legal protections will that company have?
Or to think about this more broadly, given that there are no national borders in space, does it make sense for parts of space to be privatized, or should space be considered common property that belongs to everyone?
So far, the laws and international treaties that have tried to deal with this don't really make clear how to answer these questions. But you'll notice something interesting about the questions themselves. They're all similar to questions that once had to be answered by people here on our own planet. And that's the thing about space, Matt says. It's mostly a blank economic and societal slate right now. So the way we think about these questions might also tell us something about the way we handle our own problems closer to home.
When we think about the idealistic visions we have of space and the problems we would want to avoid in space that we have here on Earth, we can turn that around and we can say, well, we live in a space colony, just happens to be called Earth.
The planet is Earth!
It was Earth all along.
It was Earth all along!